Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 11. Lord Ramachandra rules the world. Text 23. Purusho Ramacharitam. Shravanair Upadarayan Anrishamsya Paro Rajan Karma Bandar Vimuchite. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Okay, please repeat. O King Parikshit, anyone who orally receives the narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. Purport. Here, in this material world, everyone is envious of someone else. Even in religious life, it is sometimes found that if one devotee has advanced in spiritual activities, other devotees are envious of him. Such envious devotees are not completely freed from the bondage of birth and death. As long as one is not completely free from the cause of birth and death, one cannot enter into the Sanatana Dhamma, or eternal pastimes of the Lord. One becomes envious because of being influenced by the designations of the body. But the liberated devotee has nothing to do with the body, and therefore he is completely on the transcendental platform. A devotee is never envious of anyone, even his enemy. Because the devotee knows that the Lord is his supreme protector, he thinks, what harm can the so-called enemy do? Thus, a devotee is confident about his protection. The Lord says, Ye yata mam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham. Quote, according to the proportion of one's surrender unto me, I respond accordingly. End quote. A devotee must therefore be completely free from envy, especially of other devotees. To envy other devotees is a great offense, a Vaishnava aparad. A devotee who constantly engages in hearing and chanting Shravanam, Kirtanam, is certainly freed from the disease of envy, and thus he becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. So we are reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Purana, and in the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, second verse, it is said, Paramo Nimatsaranam Satam Vedyam. This Bhagavat Purana, this Srimad Bhagavatam, is understandable. It's understood by the devotees who are without envy. Nirmatsaranam. You know, there are different Sanskrit words for envy. Matsara is one of them. So nir matsaram means those who are without envy. Another Sanskrit word for envy is dveshaha. And another is asuya. So the devotee is described as Advaishta Sarva Bhutanam in Bhagavad Gita by Lord Krishna. The devotee is without envy towards any living thing. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also tells Arjuna, Idam te guyatamam vakshami te anasuyave. He says, I will explain to you this most confidential knowledge because you are without envy. So asuya means envy, anasuya means without envy. So there are many Sanskrit words for envy. And envy is the primary cause of our remaining in the cycle of birth and death, as Srila Prabhupada says many times here in these purports. And Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Ichcha Dvesha, Ichcha Dvesha Samutena, Dvanva Mohena Bharata, Sarva Bhutani Samoham, Sarge Yanti Parantapaha. So this word Dvesha or envy is there. Sometimes Dvesha is also translated as hatred, because if you envy someone, you hate them, usually. So Krishna explains that those who are overcome by selfish desire, hatred, or envy for other living things, they are placed in this material world. Sarge yante. Sarge. Sarga means the material creation where we take birth. So sarge means into. Sarge yante. They go into the material creation, Lord Krishna explains. So this envy is very prominent in the material world. And it begins with envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So those who wish to go back home, back to Godhead, must become free of envy, free from envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, free from envy of any living thing, because all living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Mamai vamso jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana, manasastan indriyani, prakritishtani karshati. So Krishna explains, Mamai vamso, every soul is part of me. Mamai vamso jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. Just like Krishna is eternal, the soul is eternal, it's part of Krishna. So if we're not envious of Krishna, we will not be envious of any part of Krishna, any jiva, any living entity. The devotees are not envious. So envy is a characteristic of this material world. But in certain yugas and certain ages, there's more envy than in other ages. In the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is some description of the different yugas and their characteristics. In the Satya Yuga, there's very little envy. Most people are firmly fixed in the mode of goodness. But in the Treta Yuga, the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam says, people, they perform their religious duties. They do that. They're still very pious. They perform their religious duties. But for some of them, Some of them, they perform their religious duties with the desire for prestige or to become superior to others. So that is the characteristic of the Treta Yuga. And in Dwapara Yuga, it said people become to perform selfish activities, not religious activities, not dharmic activities. And they become influenced by greed and envy. And then in the Kali Yuga, there are irreligious activities and people become absorbed in madness, illusion, intoxication. And of course, envy is also there. So we are living in the Kali Yuga, and envy is very prominent in this age. So what is the nature of envy? It can mean many different things. One can be envious of a person in the sense of wanting to have that person's position or possessions. For example, if we see that someone has some opulence, we may want to possess that opulence. If someone is very wealthy and has a lot of money, then we may also want to possess that money. Or if someone has some beauty, we may want to possess that beauty. Or if someone has knowledge, we may want to possess that knowledge. So if someone has some opulence or some position, we may become envious of them. If someone has a high political position or academic position or social position, we may become envious in the sense of wanting to have that position for ourselves. And of course, these are matters of degree. Only Krishna has complete opulence. He's known as Bhagavan. He possesses all opulences in full. So Krishna is not envious of anyone because there's no one who has more than Krishna. Krishna possesses all wealth, all beauty, all fame, all wisdom, all renunciation. He possesses all opulences in full. That's why he's known as Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's not envious of anyone. But for anyone else, for any jiva soul, no matter how opulent one may be in the material sense, there's always someone who's more opulent. And therefore, even a person who possesses a lot of opulence may not be satisfied and may be envious of those who possess more. So this is one meaning of envy. It means one desires selfishly to possess the opulences of others. And connected with that may be the feeling of becoming the ill wisher of the person whose opulences one envies. For example, if one sees some beautiful person who's more beautiful or handsome than oneself, one may wish, okay, I would also like to be so beautiful or so handsome. But beyond that, one may also become the ill wisher of the person who has that opulence. One may not just want it for oneself. One may wish, oh, yes, I wish that person would become deprived of their wealth become deprived of their beauty, become deprived of their knowledge, become deprived of their high position. So that is, you know, a further dimension of envy. And then one might not only think that, then one might also act on that basis. So we see, you know, so many stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the pastimes of Lord Rama and the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Not only does some person desire to have the opulence of Krishna or some devotee, but they become the ill-wisher, the enemy of this person, not only mentally, but also in action. Like Ravana, you know, he was envious of Lord Ramachandra, his wife, and he tried to steal her. Not only became envious, not only became the enemy of Lord Ramachandra, but acted on these things, and therefore there was a great battle. So, in the material world, as Srila Prabhupada mentions here, this feeling of envy is quite prominent. And it is, in one sense, the engine which is driving, you know, the whole material society. There are so many advertisements that are meant to make us feel envious of the possessions of others, their fine dress, their jewelry, their house, their income, their wife, their children, their social position, and therefore we become inspired to try to achieve, you know, the same things, either in full or in part. You know, we work hard so that we can also have nice dress, nice jewelry, nice position, nice house or flat, the ability to take vacations or whatever, have second house, third house. So in the films, the TV, in the advertising, these images are presented to us to inspire our sense of envy so that we will also try to acquire these things. But ultimately, these things will not satisfy us. Jivara Srupahoy Krishnaranit Yadas, Lord Chaitanya says, by constitution, we are not independent enjoyers who try to satisfy ourselves in competition with other independent enjoyers. We are meant to cooperate for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the mentality of the devotee. The devotee is not envious of the Supreme Lord. If you're envious of someone, then you try to take their position. So there are some philosophers who say, we are all God. That means they believe every single one of us is God. But that is the result ultimately of envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you're envious of a person, you want to take their position. But we can never become God, because by constitution, we are the eternal servants of God. And we are meant to give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is our natural position. That is our constitutional position. And if we understand that and we act on that basis, then we're in our proper position and we become qualified to become liberated from the cycle of birth and death. As Srila Prabhupada many times stated in this purport. So ultimately, we have to become freed from envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to give up the idea that we can be independent enjoyers. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arasabha Britya. There's only one personality who can enjoy independently, and that is the Supreme Lord. Everyone else cannot enjoy independently. They can only enjoy by dovetailing their propensity to enjoy with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by adopting the mood of loving devotional service. Then one can actually enjoy. Really, not artificially. Artificially, one can try to enjoy separately, but janma mrityu jaravyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. One will only find old age, disease, death, rebirth in this material world, no matter how much one accumulates in any one lifetime, still one has to face, you know, these miseries. So to become freed from that, one has to become nirmatsara, without envy, anasuyave, without envy, advesti, without envy. This is the nature of the devotee. Devotee simply wants to serve Krishna, please Krishna, satisfy Krishna's desires. And the devotee also sees all other living entities as part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sees with equal vision. So the devotee is not envious of anyone. You can see, yes, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, you know, this person may have this opulence or that opulence, or by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, someone may not have any material opulence. But the devotee is even-minded. He doesn't, you know, sees the equality of all living things and doesn't become envious of any living entity. So that is a difficult position to come to immediately. Devotional service goes in stages. So first of all, adau shraddha. First, there's a little bit of faith, Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Adau shraddha tata sadhu sangha. One enters into the association of devotees. Adau shraddha tata sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya. One takes up the activities of devotional service. And at first, the process of devotional service, bhakti yoga, is called vaidhi bhakti. So in vaidhi bhakti, we perform the activities of devotional service even if we don't feel like it. We perform the activities because they should be done. We learn to bow down before the Murti of Krishna. Even though we don't feel like doing it, we understand, yes, it should be done. It's the system. It's the practice. Therefore, we do it. Or we bow down before the spiritual master. We may not like to bow down before some man. Many people feel like that. I don't bow down before anyone. During the French Revolution, they had a saying, "No master, no lord." We don't bow down to anyone. So this is the attitude of many modern people. They don't want to bow down before any authority. You know, they think they themselves are the supreme authorities. But in the process of bhakti yoga, we may initially feel like that. But following the principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, we do it. We do these things. We might not like to come to Mangal Arati. Why do I have to do that? Come see Krishna. I feel like sleeping. But because it's the system, we do it. Then gradually, if we perform the activities of devotional service under authority, then we may come to the spontaneous platform where we really feel like doing it. We feel like bowing down before Krishna because we understand his supreme position. We develop love for him, and we do it spontaneously, naturally, out of affection, spontaneous affection. So that is the real position, that we perform the activities of devotional service out of spontaneous affection for the Supreme Lord, genuine love. And some come to that position more quickly than others. But for others, yeah, they perform, if they're serious, they perform these activities even though they don't feel like doing it. And why don't they feel like doing it? Ultimately, it's because of envy, not wanting to accept one's position as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we try so hard independently to enjoy ourselves, and we experience so much frustration. Therefore, sometimes out of such frustration, we'll decide to take up the process of devotional service. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says there are four types of people who approach him to perform devotional service. So the best type, Krishna says, is the person in knowledge who understands the real situation and wants to act in terms of that knowledge. But there are others who approach Krishna for other reasons, for relief of suffering, for example. But that's okay. We may approach Krishna for so many reasons, but if we perform the activities of devotional service under the direction of higher authorities, gradually we'll become purified. And one of the activities of devotional service is to hear about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, just like it says here in this verse. O King Parikshit, anyone who orally receives the narrations concerning the characteristics of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes will ultimately be freed from the disease of envy and thus be liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. Normally, a person in material consciousness does not like to hear about the glories of some superior person, what, because one is envious. Oh, why are they talking about him or her? Why so much glorification? What about me? Of course, a person in material consciousness and this envious consciousness very much likes to hear his own glorification. And of course, there may be some, as part of that, there may be some false humility. In the material world, this is very, very common. There's some false humility that, you know, a person may be publicly glorified and likes it very much, but will externally say, oh, I don't deserve this honor. But really inside, they like it and they think they deserve it. So normally, such a person will not like to hear the glorification of another. And especially not glorification of the Supreme Lord. It's a very common attitude. So if one submits to such hearing, if one submits to hearing the glories of Lord Ramachandra, Lord Krishna, it has a powerful effect. It will gradually destroy the envy in the heart, which is ultimately envy of the Supreme Lord. And gradually one will get a taste for hearing these pastimes, these narrations. And the result will be one becomes liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. Fruitive activities means selfish activities performed for one's own benefit. But the devotee of the Lord performs activities for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Then one automatically becomes satisfied because we're part of the Supreme Lord. And in Shastra, there are many examples given. Like if one wants to water the leaves of a plant, one pours the water on the root, and then it's automatically distributed to all the branches and leaves. Or if one wants to satisfy the different parts of the body with food, you have to, for example, you have food in the hand, it's not going to satisfy the hand. But if you put the food in the mouth, then it goes to the stomach, which is the central organ for digestion. And then the benefit of the food goes to all parts of the body because there's some organic connection between the different parts of the body and the stomach. So because we're organically connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if we act for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, then we experience satisfaction and pleasure. This is the mystery of devotional service. Because in normal consciousness, in envious consciousness, we think if I give to someone else, I'm denying myself and therefore I don't do it. If I give to someone else, I'm losing. Or at least one makes a calculation. Yes, if I give to this person, I'll get back some profit. One will make calculations like that in the envious state of mind. But the devotee of the Supreme Lord makes no such envious calculations. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. One understands, one pleases Krishna, by pleasing Krishna's representative, the bona fide spiritual master, then one will experience satisfaction. So this envy, it's very difficult to overcome, but by constant practice, it can be overcome. By constant hearing of the glories of the Supreme Lord, it can be overcome. It can gradually be dissolved away. And when it's completely dissolved away, then we're fit to enter into the eternal lila of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his eternal servants. And that's the position we aspire to. So I'll stop here. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Any devotional quality, even though we don't have, you should show, like for preaching or just fake till you make it, like that one statement I heard. So means it comes under false humility also, as you said. So what should be done? Means we should be like true to ourselves and show to others just for preaching or like that. Or what should be done? False humility is correct or not?
If we are performing devotional service under higher authority, then we are in the proper position. We may have to practice being humble. We're not really humble, but we practice it. For example, in preaching activities, if one is approaching people, asking them to surrender to the Supreme Lord Krishna, by perhaps taking a book or giving some donation, or if we are approaching many people, then some may refuse. They may say no, and that's very difficult. Or they may say unkind things to the preacher. Why don't you do something that's of real benefit to society, instead of... So one may have to tolerate insults. One may have to tolerate a refusal. Or on the other hand, someone may heap lots of praise on you. Oh, you're so wonderful that you're doing this amazing service for the benefit of humanity. Then you may become a little proud of the position of being a devotee. So it requires some practice to develop true humility. But if we're performing our activities under authority, proper spiritual authority, then the effort that we make will result in our gradual improvement and developing the actual quality of humility. So in the beginning, we may not feel that real humility. We may feel like if somebody insults us, we may want to attack. Or if somebody praises us very greatly, we may become very puffed up and proud. So to develop that real humility takes practice. So but as long as we don't... For example, if somebody insults me and then I insult them back, then that's not good. If they insult me and I just accept it, even though I feel like insulting them back, then I'm in the proper position. But if I allow myself to be provoked into acting in the same way, then that's not good. I won't make advancement. I won't come to the position of actual humility. And sometimes it may be necessary for a devotee to respond, but not in the same way that an envious person would do it. There was the story of the snake who, by the mercy of Narada Muni, became a devotee. It's a cobra. And he was told to become humble. So he did. But then he found, when he became humble, the children and people were beating him. And so Narada Muni told him, "You can show your hood, but don't bite." So sometimes as devotees, we have to show our hood a little bit. But just like Narada Muni, he told this cobra, okay, you don't, if the people, they attack you, then you can't bite them really, but you show your hood. So sometimes that may be necessary in devotional service. Something else.
Now, if they are good at doing that by raising funds and doing treatments for the poor or blindness or leprosy, that work, how good that would be for one's progress in life, or just come out of that and do the devotional services.
Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna that the best thing is that you think of me always, spontaneously. Think of me with love and devotion 24 hours a day. So if you can't do that, then you perform the regulated process of devotional service. And then if you can't do that, Krishna says, then you give some help to those who are performing the regulative process of bhakti yoga, because every endeavor requires some money, some organization. To have this temple requires money, organization. So if you can help do that, then that's very good. And then if you can't do that, then just do any kind of selfless service. National service, social service. And then he says, if you can't do that, then cultivate knowledge. So Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that at least if a person is being unselfish, helping others, that's actually good. It's not the highest platform, but it's good. Now, if in the course of their welfare activities, they can introduce Krishna consciousness also, that's good. And, Srila Prabhupada himself was saying within 10 miles of any of his temples, no one should go hungry. Therefore, he started ISKCON, Food for Life, prasadam distribution. Of course, that's not like ordinary food. Prasadam is the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So people who like to distribute food, if they can be, of course, that's very good, to be unselfish, to give ordinary food to people that's who need it. That's good. But if in addition one can give prasadam, which has spiritual benefit as well, then that is better. Or if people like to help the blind, what is the ultimate blindness? Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. You know, the spiritual blindness is also, so if one can help people who are blind, not only in terms of either getting back their sight, their material vision, or helping them in some way, one can also give them spiritual vision. That is so much better. And of course, even the people who can see, think they can see, they may be spiritually blind, so they also need some help. So the highest welfare work is to give people Krishna consciousness. This doesn't mean that ordinary material welfare work is not valuable in some other sense. It is, because Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that's better than nothing. Best thing is to think of Krishna always. But if one isn't doing that, then if one is doing something for the welfare of others, that's good. Not the highest thing, but it's good. It's recognized by Krishna as better than complete selfishness. Something else. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.